Kavala tov and besorah tovat. If we start thinking about the matzav, we would be tense. This steinmetz is unseichel. He scares the people unnecessarily with Iran, with the missiles. Because, but all right, Baruch Hashem. All right, let's begin. Today is Monday, May 13th, 2019. And I say Boker Tov to those sitting in front of me and to all those listening across the wide expanse of Jewish existence. We're dealing with the fallout from Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. We're talking about Joe Kamenetsky. I need not tell you that Joe Kamenetsky played a very vital role after the Jewish Center. He got his basics at this Jewish Center, and then he goes on to Torah and Mesorah, and as they say, the rest is history. Torah Mesorah had the convention where?
Pennsylvania.
Sounds so interesting. And I commented that I look forward one day there should be a real definitive biographical study of Torah Mesorah. So a student listening wrote to me that there is a doctorate, I'm fully aware of it, and he also sent me interviews with William Helmreich, and I'll comment on this right now and show you what I'm talking about. And I got another email which just justifies what I'm saying. There was a fellow at Yeshiva, I actually knew his parents from the rabbinate in Philadelphia. His father was Rabbi Professor Meir Kramer, if that name means anything to anyone. He was a mismach of the Yeshiva out of the 30s, a very capable rabbi, and he became a lawyer, went to law school, became a professor at U of P in addition to the rabbinate. And this is his son, Daniel Tzvi, who I know from Yeshiva, and he did a doctorate, the Day Schools and Torah Mesorah, the Seeding of Traditional Judaism in America. It was printed afterwards by Yeshiva University. Very nice doctorate. And he does give the history, but what I'm talking about are the inner workings, not the dry history. I want to understand how Dr. Kamenetsky got along with the Rosh Yeshiva as America moved more right-wing. How the Rosh Yeshiva got along with a member of the first graduating class of Yeshiva College. How the Rosh Yeshiva got along with Joe Kamenetsky, who assisted Rabbi Young, whose shul until today has a machitza, which is substandard as far as the Lakewood Teira Vidas Chaim Berlin element is concerned. So this doctorate is fine, but it's not on just on Torah Mesorah, it's on the whole day school subject that begins with Eitz Chaim in 1886, and it fits in Torah Mesorah, but it doesn't go into this aspect. Now, in the interviews, are you familiar with William Helmreich, Professor Helmreich? So, Professor Helmreich did, I played a share in it. He thanks me in the introduction. It was his first book. Very capable individuals. I know him many decades going back. He was from the Upper West Side, I believe. He was a survivor. His parents were survivors. He was already born in America, but second generation. And he did a work on the yeshiva world, which was really epic making. Now, that work was published, and it's cited and recited. Of course, there's a time factor there. It's caught up in a time warp because it deals basically with the yeshiva world till the 1980s. He spent part of a year, a full year in Baltimore, in Neir Yisrael, to get a feeling of what yeshiva were like. And ultimately what surfaced, and I can give it out if anyone's interested, because I have another copy, I have two copies here, the interviews he conducted with the Rosh Yeshiva, you now have them in toto. And one of the interviews was not with the Rosh Yeshiva, was with Dr. Joe Kamenetsky. But again, it doesn't go into the detail I'm talking about. What that interview was mainly concerned with is very fascinating. Just because you went to yeshiva and you don't have any way to make a living, and you didn't go to yeshiva university, and you didn't go to Columbia, and you didn't go to Harvard, and you don't have a degree, so willy-nilly, without choice, ala pam v'chamatam, you become a teacher in a day school. Nu, are you capable of teaching in a day school? And that's the discussion between Joe Kamenetsky and what Torah Masora tried to do. And it's a very interesting discussion, because Torah Masora basically developed teacher programs that yeshiva bachrim should have some concept of education, of psychology, of how you deal with children. And this is what they talk about. And there's some interesting questions there, mainly, what do you do with teachers who have been around 20 years who don't know the first thing about how to get along with a young man? And now you have better products of these yeshiva who have gone through the teacher's training program of Torah Masora. What do? Fire the old people, take in the new people? Very interesting discussion. Now, to prove I'm right, and what I told you about his book, and Joe Kamenetsky told me himself that he had to self-censor what he was writing. So I get an email from my student, Dr. Alan Blau. Dr. Alan Blau, I need not tell you, I've quoted him before, quite a wonderful individual, a psychologist, heads up the Satma Psychological Guidance Service. There are many psychologists working under him. And his father, Rabbi Blau, who's a mishmach from the yeshiva, probably out of the 40s, who later became an insurance agent, and everyone knew him because he sold the policies to the RCA, and he was very close. Joe Kamenetsky, the Blau family, and my own family, the Daniel family, were very close in Borough Park. This all ties in with the Chaim Zimmerman as well. And he writes, I listened to your shiur and Dr. Joseph Kamenetsky with great interest. Dr. Kamenetsky and my father were very close and were part of a group of men that had met every Shabbos afternoon to learn Gemara in the basement of Shomri Amunah in Borough Park. The basement of Shomri Amunah was a shtibel. There was a second minyan there. That's where Reb Chaim Zimmerman was basically the rav. And he describes Dr. Kamenetsky, very humble, with my own ears. I heard when he referred to my father as his Rebbe, despite my father being a considerably younger man than he. Noach Daniel, of course, was part of that group, and it spanned many decades. I've heard many memories of Joe as my father referred to him. One stands out in particular, how every Simchas Torah he served as the master of ceremonies, if you will, for the minyan in the basement of Shomrei Amunah. I'll come back to that in a few minutes. The unwavering joy and almost childlike delight on his face is difficult to describe. Paradoxically, he radiated an aura of Torah and aristocracy together with simplicity and total approachability. We'll come back as well to that. One note about self-centering in his book, Memorable Encounters. Although there are doubtless some things that he decided on his own not to put into print, his basic inclination was to write an honest book and tell a complete and real story. There were many things, however, that were in the original manuscript, but the publisher made him remove it, saying they couldn't print it. This caused Dr. Kamenetsky much frustration, and he felt it diminished his work. He confided this to my father at the time it was happening. So I stand on what I said last week, and you know who the publisher was? It was Art Scroll, their division, Masora. When Art Scroll got involved in autobiographical material, so certain things were written there that they didn't want the Art Scroll imprimatur on, so they developed a subsidiary called Masora Publishing. But nevertheless, it had to be within the conformity of Art Scroll's concepts. Okay, but let me pick up where I left off. And here we come to the heart of the Rabbi Young and the Joe Kamenetsky relationship. And you'll see that my comrade Alan Blau's description of Joe Kamenetsky is right on. And he describes how he became friendly. We mentioned this at the end of last week. He became friendly with Rabbi Young, and he confided in Rabbi Young about the financial problems in his house, his father's illness, the children. And Rabbi Young engaged him to teach his daughters, Erna and Rosalie. And whenever he came to the Young house, there was a cup of milk for him. And Rabbi Young started to appreciate his teaching ability. And when he opened up a Talmud Torah in 1934, he was engaged to teach. 1 year later, he became principal. And for the next 12 years, he basically was a right hand of Rabbi Young, ran the Talmud Torah, and got involved with the synagogue as well.
Where was the Talmud Torah?
In Jewish Center. No, Jewish Center. We're talking on the Upper West Side. And here he writes in his autobiography that at the same time, I functioned in the role of assistant rabbi. Not in name, but in fact. And he writes how he edited the bulletin and he became one of the key members of the staff. When Rabbi Young wasn't there, they turned to him. His wife and my wife and I became members of the Jewish Center. And he said, now this is very important, while many criticized the center as being a rich man's club, and he quotes the head bookkeeper, Susan Samuel, the head bookkeeper for one, that's in parentheses. In other words, she probably saw how wealthy these people are. She called it a rich man's club, but by Kamenetsky writes, it was really a collection of genial Jews, most of whom did not put on too many airs and who were eager to participate in the beautiful practice of Judaism as projected by Rabbi Young. And this is what we have to understand. The Balabatim of Jewish Center were on a different level than the Balabatim in Bayside, Queens. The Balabatim in Bayside, Queens were fine Balabatim, but these were not well-to-do people with an earthly vision, with a total vision, with a worldly vision. Also, many of them were survivors after World War II, and when Rabbi Bernstein was not in the shul, they were upset with him. Rabbi Young's Balabatim, many of them had a vision, felt a responsibility. They were wealthy. It's the Upper West Side. And their rabbi's vision is worthy of every Jew in the world. And that's why he could become a world figure and there was no resentment. And here, Joe Kamenetsky's description, beautiful. Rabbi Young inspired enjoyment in being a Jew. He was an aristocrat in appearance and a true gentleman. Didn't we just hear this about Joe Kamenetsky by Alan Blau? Here's Joe Kamenetsky describing Rabbi Young. And he had the knack of turning a phrase. I have never forgotten one of his classic expressions in talking about Greek culture. Quote, the Greeks, he said, stressed the holiness of beauty while the Jew sees the beauty of holiness. The holiness of beauty, that's the Greeks. It's Western civilization to a certain degree. It's caught up here. I need not tell you when we talk about Sneed, what are we talking about? But the Jew sees the beauty of holiness. And I have to tell you, this is a very powerful statement. You can think about it. Go online. Go to the website, Yeshiva World News. You go to the website yesterday, they have a photo gallery of the Gedolei Yisrael, 99% Hasidim, during Pesach. And I never saw so many pictures in my life. I don't know how it's done, a photo gallery. Literally 100 pictures. You keep on, what's the word they use? Scribing down? What word should I use?
Clicking?
Scrolling. Yashikaya. You keep on scrolling down and down and one picture after another. And I have to tell you, as a Litvak, I asked myself, what the heck is this? Bainish Alayla, we all, I burn chametz. Charlie, you burn chametz? Yes or no? What the heck are you taking my picture? What do I look at? The guy has a beard and black hair. And they're dancing. Mayim shalanu, all right. You want to bake matzah? Take mayim shalanu. Excuse me? No, but you see, the beauty of holiness. A chassid looks, he participates. The Rebbe lights Hanukkah candles. It turns in here, Hanukkah candles. We all like Hanukkah candles. Ribbono shel Olam, I like Hanukkah candles. Here, a Rebbe's court, what Hanukkah candles turn into. And they see holiness. Chassidish daher, chassidish mareh. I'm a Litvak. To me, I don't understand it. I got Ribbono shel Olam, what's cooking on? No, they had a shuckle. What's the big deal? I also shuckle when I daven. But you see, the Jew, and this is Chassidus, very well said. But here there's even more. So we just mentioned Simchas Torah. Now I'll come back to it. Watch. And I know the people involved. To be sure, at times I found the formal, rather stilted services at the Jewish Center hard to take. It was a far cry from the warmth of Brunsville davening. For instance, I could never accept the idea of allowing the children to Greg Heyman only six times during the reading of the Megillah. And here you're, either way, you have that conflict. Now what are you doing, shul? I'm a Litvak, I have to tell you, I seek out a minyan where there are no children to hit Greg. I go to a minyan where I'm the youngest one, and believe me, I'm no youngster. But a Litvak, in the Megillah, it's not a joke. Yeah, but you go to a regular shul, I go to a Hasidic shul, this is the kids, it's their holiday, it's their Gregors, it's their stomping of the feet. No, what do you do with dignity? Malka grew up in Ramaz. Many times she davened when it was possible to go to Kehillat Yeshurin. Ramaz might have had school on Tainit Esther, and she wound up davening in Kehillat Yeshurin. They controlled the children 100%. Has to be dignity. I got to ask my wife. I think it was two turns on the Gregor, and that's all. And here, six times they paused and let them make a little noise, and that was all. And remember, he's coming from Brooklyn, he's coming from his shtibl. Remember what we said last week. Then, if not for Sam Kramer, a friendly Lubavitcher chassid, the Simchas Torah services would have been wholly controlled. No, does the name Sam Kramer mean anything to you? No, Milton Kramer just died this year. He was the last surviving son. The Kramer family came to America, I believe, in the 1890s. Lubavitcher chassidim did very well here. And the entire family remained from. How many families do you know like that? You know how many Kramers I taught? Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Unbelievable. When the Rebbe came to America, the sixth Rebbe in 1929, who hosted them? The key family was the Kramer family. And here is Sam Kramer in Jewish Center, and he fought the establishment on Simchas Torah. You want to go crazy, you want to go wild. Again, it's been a Litvak. I have to, et chata'ai ani maskir hayom. I admit my sins. I got my grandchildren organized years ago. We organized a 6:30, a 6 o'clock minyan, a family minyan. Now it's open to the public, so we have more people. But it began as a family minyan. But before my children began the minyan, I used to go 6 o'clock to old Rivka. And new Simchas Torah, all right, you do hakafis, you dance a little, minhag d'Torah, everyone gets an aliyah, minhag Yisrael. Then you go home, you make Kiddush, and you start learning. Simchas Torah, Shmini Atzeres, what's going on here? It's a Litvak, a chassid, Simchas Torah. Wow, and this is Sam Kramer. And now you can understand what Alan Blau wrote about Joe Kamenetsky. He became a half-breed, a hybrid. It became Shatnes, Kalayim. He, Brooklyn, go wild, but Jewish Center control, And he ran the dancing. He was the one who said, Ad kan hakafa aleph, ad kan hakafa bet, in the downstairs minyan in Shomrei Emunah. But nevertheless, as I look back, I realize that Rabbi Young taught me how to have class. I would listen carefully to his sermons and speeches, and he would take me with him to special meetings. To this day, I find myself repeating some of his interpretations. I was an avid student of his language, his thoughts, his persona, in the pulpit and elsewhere. And as I put it to my friends, he, quote, launched me, end quote. And this was the relationship. This was Joe Kamenetsky. Now, but it's more than that. Here you see what Jewish Center was about. Jewish Center had, as part of their outreach and benevolent activities, they had a Rabbanim Aid Society. In other words, these were Jews. I have Talmidim among children of these Jews. And I can tell you, one Talmid has given me and my wife endless gifts of any type you can imagine. For life, books, the computer age. And we don't like to take gifts without repaying. Baruch Hashem, I don't have to, I can repay. I have what to give other people, all right? I give a book, I sign, I this, I that. My wife gives away artwork that she did, scarves, etc. He will not take a thing. He, over the decades, he says, my father taught me, you never take from a rabbi, you only give a rabbi. And this Jewish center, you had wealthy Balabatim, you had the Gottesman family, among others. These people had, by today's standards, they're multi-millionaires. And they felt very bad that Rabbanim are suffering. So Rabbi Kamenetsky, when he's with his mother in Bronzeville and he's talking with her, he explains to her what the Jewish center does. So one of the things he mentioned to his mother was the Rabbanim Aid Society. So his mother told him, there's a poor rabbi living on Ralph Avenue, anyone at St. John's Place. My wife knows these streets one by one by one because she was born there, but she didn't grow up there. But whenever they visit her grandparents, this was where her mother grew up, and her uncles, her aunt, this was home to them. So she told Joe about it. Joe came and told Mrs. Young, Rebbetzin Young, about this rabbi. Did you know that Mrs. Young came to the rabbi's home, purchased linoleum for the entire apartment, and even arranged for him to get a new set of teeth? And that takes us back to Vic's comment of 20 minutes ago, a half hour ago. The dentists are making a living. You're right. But among the dentists, you have tzaddikim. I would hope that this dentist didn't charge the committee from Jewish Center more the cost of the material. I can tell you, B'didi Haviyud, obviously I can't mention the name, but someone very, a prisoner of Zion gets out of Russia, and with all the taram and all the noise and all that goes on, his teeth, they are worthless. And my nephew undertook to totally rebuild this man's teeth. All that had to cover cost was the material that went in. And a student of mine told his father, a Yiddish tzaddik, Russia, father covered the entire cost. No fundraising was needed, all done without any publicity whatsoever. These are Jews, this is our people. We can be very proud of what the Torah people have raised. Now, there's one, and Joe Kamenetsky continues, there's one particular story I love to tell about Rabbi Young. He was very proud of one aspect of his life. The first Knesiyah Gedolah in 1923, he was the secretary of the Chafetz Chaim. And he would meet with the Chafetz Chaim every morning, and whatever letters had to be written, whatever had to be accomplished, he would handle this for the Chafetz Chaim. And the morning after the Chafetz Chaim spoke in public, and he spoke at the 1923, I think also at the 29, Knisya Gedolah, the Chafetz Chaim said to him, Rabbi Young would always repeat this quote, "Last night everyone gave me so much kavod. They called me a great Talmud Chacham and the like. No, I am not such a great man. They respected me because I am an old man." Got it? And that's the Chafetz Chaim speaking. And I need not tell you, I grew up third generation American, but I have to say I was all of 13 years of age when I came in for my bechina with Rav Mendel Zak, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, and I remember I was shaking that I'm meeting the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. I knew who he was. And my rebbeim in Solanta, the Shanghai crowd, I remember Rav Henoch Fishman boasting that he was at the Chafetz Chaim's funeral. That stayed in my mind that here my Rebbe, a big Talmud Chacham, Mirya, boasting about nothing, boast about me, or boast about your relationship with Yeruchim Levavitz, boast about your relationship with the Brisk Rav, right? He learned in Brisk. No, that he was at the Chafetz Chaim's funeral. What a beautiful thought. And this is the Chafetz Chaim. Ich bin a gar nicht, ich bin nicht so greise Talmud Chacham, aber sie mir mechabe gewinnt, mit ne Sevak takum, wo hadata pene Zakein. And I have to tell you, unfortunately, I've used that line simply in a different respect, but sometimes I'm on the bus, I'm on the light rail, people get up and give me their seat, and I say to them, hadata pene Zakein, all right, and mit ne Sevak takum, good education. And here's a beautiful story, what life is about. And Charlie, this story is especially for you. The Rebbe's in a benevolent mood today, so it doesn't even go for 36, but it would be a bargain at 36 to the IOU list. Now, this is Joe Kamenetz. He's a young man, and look, as young men, we have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do in life? You don't want to remain principal of a Talmud Torah and Jewish Center forever? So as I told you last week, he never got smicha from the yeshiva, but he had two private smichas. That was very common at that time. Today, the rabbinical council does not recognize private smicha. You have to have from an institution. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I think at one time if you had two smichot, they recognized it. I think today it must be from a proper institution. It cannot just be a private smicha. All right, so he had two private smicha. It gives you the right to call yourself rabbi. And in the late 30s, a shtela is open in Baltimore. The famous Sheirit Israel Glen Avenue Shul in Baltimore. Now, this shul was famous because you could only become a member if you were Shomrei Shabbat. All right? Then you have to understand, this is a kid in Bronzeville who heard about the shul, and he said, for us, it was epic making a shul that has standards like that. In Young Israel, you couldn't become an officer if you were not Shomrei Shabbat. But a member you could become. Here, there's a shul in Borough Park that's called the Shomrei Shabbat Shul until today. It's at 52nd Street and 13th Avenue. And there, 53rd and 13th Avenue, thank you. And there too, it's Shomrei Shabbat Shul. You can only be there today. It's a minion factory, but it was called the Shomrei Shabbat Shul because only if you were Shomrei Shabbat could you become a member. And he raises the issue here, like in Brooklyn, and this is a very serious issue. Who did you honor at a shul dinner? Here's some kid who grew up in Bronzeville, became a manufacturer, became a real estate guy, became a lawyer, made a fortune of money, also became a Machalos Shabbos. And he's the one you honor. And I can tell you that a guy named Rothkopf got into what people were debating. Did he do the right thing or the wrong thing? What am I talking about? In my dissertation on Bernard Revel and afterwards in my published book, I deal with problems in the yeshiva. One of the problems I raise and this was a real question, how do you, give an honorary degree to Herbert Lehman, governor of New York, senator? You give an honorary degree to Albert Einstein? Now, what are you telling the students? Little guys are studying there. Charlie Hexter's a kid in yeshiva. And look who they're honoring. What is that saying to Charlie? That it doesn't matter if you're Frum, doesn't matter if you're Shomer Shabbos, as long as you're a great scientist or a great politician or make a lot of money, we give you an honorary degree. All right, this is a delicate question. You should know I was criticized. I was criticized. Why did you raise this issue? It looks bad for yeshiva. I'm telling you, public relations. I said to them, oh, this is scholarship. You have to do an honest work. It is a delicate question. All right, it's a question that hangs fire. The same issue may be raised today, but it's an interesting question. I'm not here to paskin. Obviously, it depends on the moment, the time, the setting, the people. But here he heard about the shul that was Elnei Shomrei Shabbos. If I decide to go into the rabbinate, I thought this was the pulpit for me. When I heard that Rabbi Young knew some of the leading members of the shul, I asked him to intervene in my behalf. He did call a Mrs. Mayor Strauss, who was quite active in the shul, and he told her, I have a young rabbi to recommend whose greatest asset is his relationship with the young people. All right, Rabbi Kamenetsky was confident. If Rabbi Young calls, can't go wrong. A few days later, he called me into his office, and he took out a book in German written by a Rabbi Shimon Schwab and calmly told me that the congregation was bringing the man from Germany to assume the position. Somewhat nettled at the idea that the congregation had chosen their spiritual leader sight unseen, without the least personal introduction, I told Rabbi Young that if that's the way a rabbi was chosen, I better stick to education. All right? Turned out, of course, that Rabbi Schwab became one of the foremost spiritual leaders of American Jewry. I learned many years later from his son, Rabbi Moshe Schwab, that his father knew not a word of English when he came to the States. Faced with the prospect of delivering his acceptance address to the congregation, he applied his attentions to an English grammar book and dictionary, and delivered his speech by rote. Charlie, what when Rabbi Schwab gave a sermon in your time, what language?
English, of course.
And how was his English?
Excellent.
Excellent. All right. What a story. Did you notice how they hired him? Sight unseen. I can tell you the Jewish center fell into this trap many years later. Who knows what I'm talking about?
He was my Masada Kiddush.
Rabbi Schwab, well, I wouldn't think of, obviously, I wouldn't have doubts to that. Vic, years later, Jewish Center, fell into the same trap, knew who can help me. Remember, it was after Rabbi Riskin was gone, and we're going to come back to Rabbi Riskin later today. I'm ready to roll like a missile, but we'll leave that towards the end. I got a lot of emails waiting to hear my comments. So they hired a rabbi from England. They heard him speak by cassette, by tapes, by cassette. No, the Jacobowitz was on Fifth Avenue. He went to England. Rabbi Bernstein. Remember Isaac Bernstein? Rabbi Bernstein. The shidduch, I think, lasted a year. It didn't work out. He had English mentality, and they had Upper West Side New York mentality. And it just didn't work out. And he was very capable and very, he has a son here, Bayit Vagan, who's fabulous. He writes, he teaches, he's so insightful. And what a father and son combination. But it didn't work out. And the truth is, that they took a chance. When you hire a rabbi sight unseen, it's not that he can have learning, he can speak. You have to see his interactions, his personality. In my case, we just were Menachem Avil, Professor Elma Affenbach died a week ago. They just got up Shiva. You should recognize the name, Emil L. Affenbach's son. So when I came in, Lenachem Avil with Malka, we were like the biggest jichus there because we know him since 1961. So they want me to tell stories. So Malka told, how did we first meet him? I graduated Yeshiva 61. I was 23 years old. We were just married a year. We just had a baby. Baby was a few weeks old. So to go down to Lower Merion, Ballykinder, Pennsylvania, Malka couldn't go. I went back and forth on the train. I went for Shabbos. I spoke, you know, I taught. I was interviewed. All right. But now they want to know the Rebbetzin. Remember, the Rabbinate today, even in today, with all the professional Rebbetzins and all that's being done to educate women and give them titles, but the Rebbetzin has to be Chabad's the Rebbetzin, 100%. Outside of Chabad, it's 50%. So Elma Affenbach's father-in-law had just moved from the Lower East Bronx into the Mount Eden neighborhood, and he came to visit us, to look over the house, to see if Malka's a balabasta, to meet her. So you got him here, they hired the rabbi, all right, but he already evidently had a reputation, and I need not tell you, it was a good match and a great success story. But it left our young Dr. Kamenetsky a little bit frustrated. Now, the other part of this memoir that I want to quote is also extremely fascinating and takes us back to an issue that I spoke about in great length maybe 2 years ago, etc., maybe more than 2 years ago. The battle for the presidency of Yeshiva University when Rabbi Revel died. This is an ongoing saga. Yeshivas had difficulty. Rabbi Revel was the founder, the first president, the first Rosh Yeshiva. He died very suddenly. Not only did he die very suddenly, but 5-6 weeks later, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik died very suddenly. And this left the yeshiva without leadership. No president, no Rosh Yeshiva left that tzavah. It's not like the Haredi world, where at the funeral, they announce who the successor will be, which, by the way, is a very good idea. It saves, to a certain degree, it saves machloikis. Not all the time. For example, Panovich is an example where the machloikis is endless. But in the Hasidic world, they announce, more or less, it works quite well. Why you got up in tremendous machloikit? On one hand, there was a young man whose greatest dream was to become president, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University. It was the vision of his life, the fulfillment of his life. He had come to America a greenhorn, and he conquered America. His name was Mori Rebbe HaRav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. All right? Logically speaking, should have been the natural successor, Reb Moshe's son, PhD from Berlin. But he was in Boston. He got caught up with the Agudat HaRabbanim politics, which was at its high point at this time. We still don't have a powerful rabbinical council, and you still have endless Rabbanim who are active in the active rabbinate, Agudat HaRabbanim people. And the Yeshiva University people tended to identify the Agudas Rabbanim. It's like people today have an attitude towards Haredim. They're horrible, they're terrible, they do this, they do that. It's part of the Israeli mentality. And I suffer from it because I see some of my own grandchildren have that attitude. They can't get over the army problem, in other words, which I understand. The gius is a big problem and I understand it. But the attitude was, Rabbi Soloveitchik is part of the Kabbal, part of the club of the Agudas HaRabbanim, and they're against modernity, and all they do is take money for Heksherim, and they do this illegal and that illegal. So there was opposition. And here, a strong element coalesced around Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. And here you have Joe Kamenetsky, who is Rabbi Leo Young's right hand in the rabbinate, in Jewish Center. And at the same time, in 1940, 41, when all this is happening, it's essentially 41, 42, because Rabbi Revel dies December 2nd, 1940, and Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik dies the end of January 1941. And he's president of the Yeshiva College alumni, Joe Kamenetsky. So the alumni gets involved. They want to have a say. And this is logical. Students should have a say in who the next Rosh Yeshiva, who the next president will be. And the name that they suggest is Dr. Nathan Isaacs. Catch the name? The Isaacs family. Isaacs family, one of the most famous Orthodox American Jewish families, memory of its members, live right here in Israel today, within walking distance of where we're sitting. The Isaacs family, quite a family. They were in America since, I think, if not before the Civil War, right after the Civil War. And they remain from. And Dr. Nathan Isaacs was a professor at Harvard. And they pleaded with him, Rabbi Revel, come to yeshiva. He was the leading teacher. He was the scientist. He ran the college. He would be what we call today the dean. And the students loved him. See, he represented the American dream. A frum balabas who was learned, studied, knew Gemara, knew Shas, and had conquered the American scene, professor at Harvard University. Wow. However, the Balabatim didn't buy the idea, and the reason was very simple. The Balabatim at that time unanimously felt that the president of Yeshiva University has to be also the Rosh Yeshiva, has to be a role model, has to be a Talmud Chacham, has to be someone in the guise of Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel. It's not like many decades later, Yomo, when who becomes president? The Balabatim, Richard Joe. You follow? Then it's already different thinking. The Balabatim feel a president is money and finance, and Richard Joe is a fabulous money financial wizard. What he did for Hillel House, and he's a man of vision and how to deal with education. And the Rosh Yeshiva will take care of the yeshiva. And they split the responsibility. You now see with the election of my student, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, the Balabatim have gone back to the more original concept that the president should be a role model, a Talmud Chacham, a Rav, etc. All right. We can debate this from today to tomorrow, but in 1941, Isaacs did not stand a chance. The students loved him. Now, that element that supported Isaacs basically turned to Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. And here's where tremendous heartache began, lasted for 2-3 years. Rabbi Soloveitchik had his sworn supporters. Rabbi Young had his sworn supporters. The president of a Yeshiva College alumni works for Rabbi Young. And the students, many of them said, Rabbi Young is what we want to be. Rabbi Soloveitchik was identified with the Agudas HaRabbanim, with the old God. And Rabbi Young represented Torim Derech Eretz, Torim culture, represented a modern, sophisticated rabbinate. He comes from Hungary, Germany, England, and that's the world we want more than the world of Lithuania and White Russia and all that Rabbi Soloveitchik represented. and there was a bitter battle. And poor Kamenetsky was caught in the middle of it because people threw at him, you're the president, you're very friendly with Rabbi Young. There was another graduate of the yeshiva at this time, Rabbi Lenny Rosenfeld, recognized the name, who was the son-in-law of Rabbi Young. He was fighting along with Kamenetsky for Rabbi Young, and it was a standoff. Now, here's where his autobiography is very fascinating. This art scroll did not cut out because it's not giving you the inner story of their world. This is the inner story of the YU world. But this recollection here only certifies what a dummy like Rakefer has said thousands of times in so many different lectures. I didn't live it, but it was my scholarly conclusion from studying the era, the documents, the interviews, the people I knew, I saw, defining it and distilling it with a scholarly instinct. And it shows I was absolutely right. And here I'm quoting him, and you can check it out. It begins on page 51. What happened was when the Balabatim and the key people involved saw there was a stalemate, they saw that there's never going to be a majority for Rabbi Soloveitchik, and there's never going to be a majority for Rabbi Young. And remember what I told you, the jokers used to say, if Rabbi Soloveitchik is elected, there'll be no college, Rabbi Young will be, there'll be no yeshiva. And there was some truth to it in the sense that I explained a few weeks ago. But there was one man in the yeshiva who was a youngster, all of basically 30 years old, when this was happening. His name, Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin. No one in his right mind, if you would have said in 1941, Rabbi Belkin is going to be elected the next president, they would have laughed you out of the place. What are you talking about? Rabbi Belkin came to America in 1928, actually came to Canada, joined his sister in Canada, Windsor, Ontario. From Canada, he had to continue, he had to learn. He was a young man. He was born in 1911, I believe, so make it. He was 17 years old. He was a youngster. So they told him the only yeshiva on a level that you might find something to teach you, something you don't know, is you got to get to New York to Yeshiva Yitzchok Chanan. He gets to New York to Yeshiva Yitzchok Chanan. Here's a kid who can barely speak English. This is 1928, 1929. And Agoinish a cup, and within a few days after his arrival, they're overwhelmed. The guy is an Eloi, his ability backwards, forwards, Shas, Paiskim, Litvishavel, Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, Talmud of Reb Mendel Zaks, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law in Rotten. And then he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva New Haven. They open up the Yeshiva New Haven. It's 1929, 1930. And he's on the original New Haven faculty. Everyone loves him. But they're giving him advice. You want to succeed in America, you need an advanced degree. You have to go to college. You have to go to university. And within a few years, this greenhorn, who knew no English, has a PhD from Brown University, a member of Phi Beta Kappa. Okay? This is quite an achievement. In the mid-30s, Rabbi Revel brings him back to the yeshiva, appoints him a Rosh Yeshiva. A year later, he becomes an instructor in the college in Greek and Latin, and the students love him. His shir was the most popular shir in the yeshiva. He was a Rebbe par excellence. I heard this from Talmud after Talmud who studied with him, then along most of them in a long life, but for instance, Nachman Bulman. When Rabbi Bulman would talk about his Rebbe, Reb Shmuel Belkin, there were tears in his eyes. And when Reb Shmuel Belkin later would talk about his Talmidim, there were tears in his eyes. Read the Washington. Look what Rakefet quotes from Dr. Belkin. May have been the greatest mistake of his life to give up being a Rebbe in the classroom and go on to become president of yeshiva. Take the Rav. Could you imagine what would have become of the Rav had he been elected president of Yeshiva University? But all right, that's life. The right person in the right place at the right time, you never know for sure. Sometimes it's the right person, but it's the wrong place to be. Sometimes it's the wrong person, but he's there at the right time. And tremendous love for Rabbi Belkin. But president of Yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva? He's a youngster. He's 30 years of age. What are you talking about? How many years has he been in America? How many years ago just recently got his doctorate? More than that, the people who supported Rabbi Belkin and turned him into a viable candidate, Sarah Kefet always would tell you, Chazal, Chet Zamed Lamed. So you're almost looking at me, Rebbe, Chazal, what did they have to do with Rabbi Belkin? Chazal are the Amorayim, the Tanoim, Chachameinu, Zichronim Levracha. Chazal, Churgin, Luchstein, Zar. Can you repeat the names? Rabbi Dr. Pinchas Churgin. Rabbi Joe H. Luchstein. Zar. Rabbi or Mr., I don't think he actually had smicha, I never wanted to use it, Mr. Samuel Shmuel Leib Samuel Zar. Knew these are three famous names. Churgin, he was the president of Teachers Institute. He ran the part of the yeshiva that was known as TI, Teachers Institute. He was president of the Mizrahi in America. When Rev Meir Berlin returned to Israel, he was succeeded as the president, as the prime figure on the American scene, Pinchas Churgin. No, you know the name. Later, the founder of Bar Ilan University. Right or wrong? Pinchas Churgin. Who was second? The most prominent American rabbi. The rival of Rabbi Young. The west side was Rabbi Young. The east side was Rabbi Joe Luchstein. Kehilat Yeshurun. Ramaz, Balabatim worth billions by today's standards. Who would ever dream that the family of the President of the United States would come out of Kehilat Yeshurun? And what a powerful influence he was in the yeshiva. Ramaz's grand son-in-law, Joe Luchstein. And then Shmuel Leib Zar, he was the man on the spot. Shmuel Leib Zar, a Telz Talmid Chacham, learned in Telz, wound up in England when his Rebbe, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Lezer Gordon, the founder of Telz, went to England to fundraise. Rabbi Shmuel Leib Zar accompanied him. Rabbi Gordon has a heart attack and passes on in London. He's buried there, I believe. And it's Rav Shmuel Leib Zar who eulogizes his Rebbe. Winds up in America, becomes very close to Dr. Revel. Why? Dr. Revel had one weakness. If you told him you came from Telz, it gave you entree to his heart and his soul. Charlie, why? Why Telz? Dr. Revel was autodidactic. Dr. Revel was a genius. The only yeshiva he ever spent time in, and it was only one term basically, was Telz Yeshiva. That was the only yeshiva. So we always had an affinity for his Rebbe, Reb Shimon Shkop from Telz. For later he saves Rabbi Volk at Telz. He saves Rabbi Arnest from the Holocaust at Telz. And of Shmuel Leib Zar, bright fellow, very with it. The uncle of Reb Mordechai Gifter, if that will help you place Reb Shmuel Leib Zar, he becomes Rabbi Revel's right hand. There is no one that Rabbi Revel trusts more on the yeshiva scene that Rav Shmuel Leib saw. And Chazal go to work. We have a candidate. We can go beyond Rabbi Soloveitchik and Young, Rabbi Belkin. And they sell Rabbi Belkin to the Balabatan. And Joe Kamenetsky and others like Lenny Rosenfeld and others, they fight. They're very upset. What they're worried about is that Chazal will run the yeshiva. Rabbi Belkin will be no more than a face-saving device. Yes, he's the Rosh Yeshiva, he's the president. But Rabbi Belkin will not lift a finger without getting clearance from Chazal. Dr. Belkin was actually someone we admired very much as a teacher and person. But we believed mistakenly that he was not strong enough for a leadership position. I had often seen Dr. Belkin walking about in the Beis Medrash. He was a quiet, pensive young man who we respected, having learned that he was a great Talmud Chacham and a student of Greek and Latin. Perhaps because we were Americans, we envied his having earned his PhD so soon after he arrived in the country. We would joke about the way he flaunted his Phi Beta Kappa pin. We respected and admired him, but it was most surprising to my friends and me that he was being considered by the faculty committee as the successor to Dr. Revel. We were convinced that he was really a pawn in the hands of Dr. Horgan and Rabbi Lookstein. We further learned that he was being pushed to the fore by the venerable Rabbi Bernard Leventhal, chief rabbi of Philadelphia. Why is that important? Why is he throwing that in? Dr. Belkin was Rabbi Leventhal's grandson-in-law. And Rabbi Leventhal represented the black, the Lishkat HaChoshech, if I can use a Haskalah term. He represented the Agudas HaRabbanim, and he's also fighting for Rabbi Belkin. We were fighting for our right as alumni to have some say in the choice of a new president. We felt that having been students at Yeshiva, we had privileged information regarding the needs of the students. We resented very much being pushed around by Dr. Horgan and Rabbi Lookstein. We felt that Dr. Belkin would be controlled by them. As president of the alumni, I signed all the charges and complaints to the board of directors soliciting the strange query from Samuel Levy, chairman of the board of directors, quote, "Who is this fellow Kamenetsky?" All right, my dear students, who is Sam Levy? Recognize the name? Borough president of Manhattan at that time. A member of Joe Lookstein's shul. I believe he was a shemeshavis. And wow, what went on? Rabbi Horgan was furious with him. Rabbi Horgan told him off. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Horgan. He studied Jewish history with Rabbi Horgan. And Rabbi Horgan said, "How do you have the right to object to the person I propose? Who are you to fight for, first for Isaac and then for Young?" And Dr. Horgan quoted the Gemara in the Zikin, in Gittin to him, with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when they carried him out in the coffin and they wanted to pierce the coffin to be sure he was dead, and they told the Romans, "We can't do that. Rabban Dakru, people will say that the students stabbed their Rebbe, and how do you stab me?" And their relationship got even worse at the moment Rabbi Kamenetsky, Joe Kamenetsky, got involved with Torah Umesorah. Can anyone tell me why? Oh, you got to know American Torah history. Mizrahi had an education committee at that time which was running all the day schools, and they wanted all the day schools to be under Mizrahi. And when Torah Mesorah was organized and Mr. Mendelovich gets involved in Torah Vadas, you have the seeds of the future chasm, the future break. Mizrahi versus Agudat Yisrael. The modern Orthodox versus the Haredim. The seeds are right there. How dare you, Joe Kamenetsky, Talmud of Yeshiva College, student of Rabbi Dr. Pinchas Churgin. By the way, Dr. Churgin had learned in Volozhin. Don't misunderstand me. He was a first-rate Talmud Chacham, but he had a PhD. He broadened. He was second to Revel as an image to the student body. And Dr. Churgin told him off. Rabban Dukru. But nevertheless, Rabbi Belton was elected, and I need not tell you, anyone that thought Chazal would control Dr. Belton were absolutely wrong. Murray, Dr. Churgin lost all influence in the yeshiva, and a few years after Dr. Belton's election, he sought safer territory, going in Aliyah, organizing Bar Ilan University. So that's one great result that came out of Rabbi Belkin's election. Gave birth to a prominent university in the state of Israel, Churgin. Rabbi Luchstein, let me tell you what these ears heard from Rabbi Luchstein, and this mind later investigated, and the ears heard more, and we can make it public now. Rabbi Luchstein saw that his influence in yeshiva is being compromised, so he got very involved with Bar Ilan University. And Malka is angry until today that every Friday she had to bring a dollar to Ramaz. They collected, every student had to bring a dollar for Bar Ilan University. Yeah, every student. Fine. Rabbi Luchstein had a golden tongue. No one equaled Rabbi Luchstein's tongue. Peh mapik magoliot. Pearls. So he retained one role in the yeshiva. When they gave an honorary doctorate, Yomo becomes a very well-known businessman. Yomo makes millions. Yomo cheats, does everything some business people do. Check his tax returns, etc. You just saw it happen with Bar Rafaeli. What's it, seven million shekels she has to pay, and she's lucky she's not going to jail. And now Yomo gives yeshiva $1 million. $20 million, I think it's $20 million you have to give today to get an honorary doctorate. And yeshiva's giving him an honorary doctorate. And here is Joe Luchstein introducing, ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to present to you this stunning businessman who is an exemplar of good deeds, of ethics and morals, and lives up to all that our sages ask our Jews to be in all aspects of religious existence. Our honorary doctorate recipient represents Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat in all his ethical dealings, as well as the Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim in his daily life. It is with great honor I present to you this example for the students of the combination of beautiful Torah, ethics, morals, and monetary arrangements. Please step forward, Yosef Mordechai Gachman, to receive the symbol of your honorary doctorate, which they put around your shoulder. And you're thinking to yourself, who the hell is he talking about? I robbed this one, I robbed that one, I pulled shtick. Murray is selling socks, he's announcing special socks made in the United States, USA, labor. Remember what Japan used to do. USA, Japan. Does anyone remember that? After World War II, when they started manufacturing, they named the city USA, USA. And you thought you were buying an American product. Yomo is getting, he doesn't know what's going on with him. He gets the, all right. This was Dr. Rabbi Luxton. Rabbi Luxton cried to me. I'm telling stories I never told before. Rabbi Luxton cried to me. He took that away. Dr. Belkin, by the late 60s, took it away. Rabbi Luxton no longer presented the honorary doctorate. So I said, what happened here? Investors, I got hold of a member of the Board of Trustees who would never lie to me. He had respect. He knew I taught his children. He knew I'm a pauper, but I know a little bit Torah and Derech Eretz. Fine. And he said to me, Aaron, you don't know the story? I said, no. He said, when Joe Luxton got involved in Bar Ilan, he had to raise funds for Bar Ilan. So here he gives Gachman the honorary doctorate. He speaks these beautiful words. 3/4 of a year later, Gachman's secretary gets a call, and she never passes calls through to the boss. Could I speak to Mr. Gachman? Who is it? He's very busy. It's Rabbi Joseph Luxton. Well, Rabbi, I'll tell him you called. Please tell him I'd like to speak with him. She goes next door. Boss, a Rabbi Joe Luxton wants to speak to you. Gachman gets a, oh, Rabbi Luxton! Give me the phone. She can't believe it. She never said, like, generally, rabbi's calling. He says, tell him I'm in China. Tell him I'm in Tibet. Tell him I'm in Thailand. She gives him the phone, and Rabbi Luxton says, Mr. Gachman, you know, I'd like to have a cup of coffee with you and like to get to know you a little better. Rabbi Luxton named the place anywhere. Sunday morning, they're having coffee, and Rabbi Luxton tells him about Bar Ilan University. And before you know it, there's a $5 million commitment on the table. And a few days later, he gets a call from Rabbi Belkin, will you renew your annual pledge? And Gachman says, I just gave. He didn't know, you know, he means this one, that one, Rabbi, why you, Bar Ilan, he's not a fine tuner. He doesn't know the exact. So the Bar Ilan fundraising cut in on yeshiva fundraising. So Chet was gone. Lamed was gone, and Dean Zahr, I don't have to quote any story. Dean Zahr, there was a kid in yeshiva named Ani Rothkopf. Charlie, you were in yeshiva. It was a small place in my time in the 50s. Dean Zahr took a shine to me. Maybe he saw him a decent individual, have a good eye. I was a kid. We became like this. With his son, his daughter, what a family. Became like this. Dean Zahr, I don't have time, all the times he confided in me, he said to me, Arnold, one thing I can tell you, Dr. Belkin gives me more and more titles. The more titles I have, the less power and influence I have. Quote, end quote. So there's no question about it. Chazal made Rabbi Belkin president, but this young man, when he took over, if you crossed him, you were in trouble. He was the Gomel Chesed par excellence, Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, love for the Fisher Talmud Chacham, but he ruled with an iron hand. Read Vic Geller's memoir, The Belkin Era. You'll get a tremendous, insightful portrait of Rav Shmuel Belkin. And Kamenetsky and Zuhoff, this part of his book, by telling us, later his younger brother went to yeshiva. His younger brother was in Dr. Belkin's shiur. Dr. Belkin tried to say, shiur, you should know. 1 year after elected president, he continued saying shiur. 40, 44, 43, 44, continued saying shiur. 44, 45, when yeshiva gets university status from New York State, he has to stop saying shir. There's no time. That final year, Rabbi Joe Kamenetsky's brother was his Talmud. And his brother raved about his Rebbe. And Joe Kamenetsky felt bad that he had been caught up in this battle and painted as the opposition. And finally, when my brother Yeshaya became a student at the Button Shiat Yeshiva, I began to feel pangs of remorse. I decided to go ask him for forgiveness. The details of my visit to his home near the yeshiva have remained indelibly stamped on my mind. There was no pretense or air about Dr. Belkin. He taught to me while he was putting his son to sleep in the crib. He dismissed the episode with a wave of his hand. He expressed no resentment and told me to forget about the whole matter. I believe in retrospect that at the time I really began to see him the way some of my friends and I would later describe him. He had a great deal of compassion of the Chofetz Chaim in him. In his youth, he had indeed been a student of the Chofetz Chaim in Rotten. We did not see his noble qualities until after he had become president of the school, when it was obvious he was an exemplary choice for the post. So, Adkan Joe Kamenetsky. With Dr. Belkin on a personal level, I could continue for another few hours. And I have to say I'm a makitaiva to Rabbi Belkin, of Shmuel Belkin. To a certain degree, I'm only sitting here because of him. And remember, at that time I had no yichus. I did it all with these 10 fingers. Today I have the biggest yichus of anyone in YU. No one can top my yichus. Blood relative of Rabbi Dr. Dov Revel. But at that time, I was totally ignorant to the fact. So to reiterate, we finished up Joe Kamenetsky. We can see the relationship. We get to know Rabbi Dr. Leo Young a little bit better through Rabbi Kamenetsky's autobiography. The story with the rabbi on Sutter Place, Ralph Avenue, that's a beautiful story. It shows as big as they were, as great as they were, as wealthy as they were, but they didn't forget where they came from. And a Rav known him for his flaws, but to help him replace his teeth. People who don't have money, teeth come last. And ultimately, if you neglect the teeth, they totally dissolve on you. They disappear, basically, with all that that implies. The story with Dr. Belkin, Dr. Young, it's ancient history already, but I still lived it. I still, when I entered the yeshiva in 51, we're talking a few years earlier, people were still talking about this. It was still alive. And in my own research, I met it heads on. I want to respond now to take the liberty of, let me move on. Give me a little extra time today, if it's okay. On Yom Ha'atzmaut in the United States this past Thursday, they evidently had a big celebration, a Sudat Mitzvah perhaps. And beforehand, two of the most prominent Rosh Yeshiva, good friends of mine, dear friends of mine, Rabbis Willig and Schechter, took questions from the audience. And it's, I don't know if it's all over the world, but it's certainly recorded, reached Israel. And people pleaded with me to listen and state my opinions. And I want to tell you, these are two individuals that you don't misunderstand. These are people totally committed to the state of Israel, total Mizrachiites. Most of all, what's most important for me, one of the Rakafet tests, the litmus test, They have children and many, many grandchildren living here. So, Baruch Hashem. But nevertheless, they dealt with certain very delicate questions and made certain comments about life in Israel. And it's not that I want to take issue, I want to elaborate and give a different point of view. And I think, having lived here for 50 years, I think I'm entitled to my opinion. The most basic question they got, if a young man graduating college asks you, should he settle in Israel, make that his goal, or remain in America? So the answer was hedged. It depends who you are, what you do. I want to make clear, I totally disagree. There is no greater mitzvah in our generation than living in the state of Israel, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. After the Holocaust, this is not even a question. If a young man has not started life and has finished college and has a degree in graduate school and has the ability to perform here, what's the question? You can be great rabbis in Chutz Laretz, you can be great medical doctors, so all right, a great medical doctor has a mitzvah of Gemilat Chesed. Here he has the same mitzvah of Gemilat Chesed, but every minute here he has the mitzvah of Binyan Haaretz, of Yishuv Haaretz. And I want to say, when it comes to Yishuv Haaretz and Gache Yosef Mordechai, is very important. It's not just Yishuv Haaretz, the Ramban sheet, the Rabbi Willer quotes the Ramban. It's everyone. Maimonides didn't count mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz as a mitzvah Tasei. Of course not. He didn't count. Anokhi Hashem Elokecha. Why is that not counted by many Rishonim? Of course, it's the basis of our existence. I heard from the Rav time and again that mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz doesn't have to be counted. Half of Shas is based upon mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz. Zrayim, Kodshim, Tarot. Without Eretz Yisrael, you don't get off the floor. It's axiomatic to our existence as Jews. And what a mitzvah to build the land of Israel after the Holocaust. What we have accomplished here. All right, but then the question shifted. What about a young man in the middle of life? And all of you know they quoted the Rav, Rabbi Shechter quotes the Rav, correctly so, and I would have quoted the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they come, Rabbi Shechter quotes the Maram Shik, answering a Talmud of the Chatam Sefer, and it's absolutely true. Label Green's Zeichat Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Green went and asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, should he go on Aliyah, and he wanted to go on Aliyah, absolutely not. Stay in Hamilton. You're successful there, you know the land. I didn't ask the Rav. I was smart enough to know if I would ask the Rav, I got certain compliments from the Rav about my teaching in YU, that I knew what the Rav would say to me. If you succeed in teaching American teenagers Tosfot and get them excited, this is your plan. No, I told the Rav, Rebbe, I'm going Aliyah. I went to see him, took a Birchat Preda. We'll talk some other time about our conversation. But I went. And Rabbi Shechter, Rabbi Willick, if a man is doing things in America, this is where you belong. All right? I want to answer their question with a little tour that we're going to take. Charlie, I want you to meet me in mid-Manhattan. We're going to go down to Amsterdam Avenue, and I think it's 69th Street, and we're going to tour what Rabbi Riskin built in the 60s into the 70s. You with me? Okay? We're now, the shul's not where it used to be. I don't know if you're aware. It's moved a little bit over. There's a big building on top, beautiful shul. Going to go into the shul. Oh, the secretary's all excited. Her mother studied with me, and she's happy to see you. She has German blood in her. She knows Washington Heights. And we get a tour of the building. Took exactly 35 minutes. Right or wrong? How much can they tour? You see, this, that. We met Rabbi Robinson. You know, people already don't know Rabbi Riskin's name there. You got to remember, time moves on. And Rabbi Robinson caught on. He's the first rabbi after Rabbi Riskin who caught on. All right? And Rabbi Riskin left this all in the prime of life. We got back to Israel. Charlie and I, we invite Vic along, but Vic says it's too much walking for him. We're now going to take a tour of what Rabbi Riskin built here by coming in Aliyah. We're now meeting Sunday morning at the one of the entrances to Efrat. We start the tour. Oh my gosh, it's time for lunch. Every house, every shuna, every shul. Before we know it, it's nighttime. We've only covered 1/5 of Efrat. Well, we continue. We're not going to give up. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The next week we want to tour his educational institutions that go beyond Efrat. Charlie and I knocked out 2 weeks of our life to see what a foreigner, a stranger, a greenhorn, an American, who in the prime of life gave it up and came here, and what he built here. Do I have to go any further? Or can I stand on this little story to tell you, and I can multiply it with many other stories of people who left in their prime. Look at Rabbaran Lichtenstein. Rabbaran changed all of Chinuch in the Mamlachti Dati Yeshiva Hesda Mizrahi world. There is new respect for Gatlut and Torah. Higher standards. We're talking Rabbaran influencing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions by now. I can give more examples. It's enough. Now, to make a statement that it's safer to live in America than to live in Israel, I don't even want to comment on. Al tiftach peh lasatan. We take this last year and add up how many Jews were killed in America because they're Jewish. I'm not certain that more were killed here. It's a very dangerous statement to make. God runs the world. The Jew has to do what he has to do. Unfortunately, we pay a price until Mashiach comes for being Jewish. Who would ever dream that the New York Times, which I believe comes out of New York City, would publish a caricature, a cartoon like they published? It makes Goebbels' propaganda look mild, and this is America. But I just want to tell you one story, a true story. I have many stories that I've seen, heard, but this is one that right around the corner from where I live. And this story says it all, needs no further comment. When I came in Aliyah, there was a very prominent YU graduate, professor here, Eliezer Jaffe. He died not so long ago, Zichrono Livracha. Lived around the corner from me. I live in Rav Berlin, he lived on Aza, Rehov Aza. We shared the podium together in the mid-70s when we received the Bernard Revel Awards. I was in my world of Torah teaching, in his world of sociology, social work, chesed. He did wonders here. But you don't know the story. He came from a Cleveland family that had a successful business. And when he went in Aliyah, I think it was the mid-60s, early 60s, he was here before us. His family was furious. How are you leaving America and leaving Cleveland and leaving a family business and family relations and going to a country that's besieged by millions of Arabs and is at war, etc., etc.? And they were furious. P.S., his brother was killed in a holdup in the store, a murder unsolved until today. I'll be happy to hear if anyone can fill me in if the murder was ever solved. The last time I asked, I was told an unsolved murder during a holdup, blown away. And Eliezer Jaffe, Baruch Hashem, has children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, al admat HaKodesh. So I would never make a statement that it's safer to live in America than to live in Israel with all the reality and all the difficulty, and I don't minimize it. If you saw the recent Makar Rishon, they pay homage to the hundreds of American Olim who arrived in the last few weeks with all the missiles falling in. Hundreds are coming off the planes with such love and feeling and comfort. Then they made another statement that caused tremendous consternation. I don't know what the statistics are. I don't know if there are any statistics. But the claim was made in front of students by one of these Rashi Yeshiva that there's a higher percentage of children who become less religious in Israel than those that remain in America. I don't know what the statistics are. I can only tell you for my generation, we who came in Aliyah, the children we raised, l'kavod u'l'tiferet. Our family, other families, maybe one or two fell away. It's part of the modern world, tremendous challenges. But when we compare ourselves to the families we left behind, our friends who didn't make the right decision, there's no comparison. But I want to say something about why children fall away. With Aliyah, it's a very important fact, a very important factor. There are ages where children can adjust very beautifully, and there are ages that are very difficult. I always tell people, the younger the children are when they come in Aliyah, the better it is for their spiritual health. And the reason is very simple. Children are very clannish. If a kid comes, parents finally make the decision, he's in 6th grade, 7th grade, high school, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th, 12th. Those are the most difficult years. Because by that time, children have an identity. And Israeli children are Israelis. This kid is an outsider looking in. He will find it very hard to totally acclimatize. And the other children, unfortunately, many of them, there's a resentment they don't accept. As much as we preach, and Bnei Akiva has done a fabulous job of teaching, be open, welcome, embrace. You take the Ethiopians. Even with Ethiopians, Bnei Akiva, Chinuch Mamlachti Dati school systems have not been totally successful. Children are clannish. If a child comes younger, he will totally acclimate. If you're already in high school, better to wait and come later, because from that point on, you're not going to be an Israeli. You're going to be an Israeli of American origins. I'm an Israeli of American origins. Nothing to be ashamed of, but I didn't grow up here. My children already are Israelis. They grew up here. Their value system, their way of thinking. So that is one factor that you must take into consideration. Yes, there are success stories, and I can give names of people who didn't listen to my advice and came with children of high school age, junior high school age. Sometimes these kids were fabulous. They succeeded despite it all. There are certain schools that go out of their way. You take Choriv and Yerushalayim, they go out of their way to be good, to adjust, to receive the immigrants. But that's in Yerushalayim and Choriv. Perhaps in Noam you can do it. But all over Israel it's a little bit more difficult. But there's another factor. And many Americans have failed in this relationship. In Beit Shemesh, Lo Aleinu, you can give many examples. You take Americans who all have college degrees. Many of them have postgraduate degrees. And they take their children and they're so happy. The kids can go to a semi-Haredi school here and they won't be looked down upon. These kids won't have all the problems that we had growing up. They won't be challenged. And they send these kids to semi-Haredi schools, Haredi schools, Chinuch Atzmai, Bat Yaakov. And many of these kids rebel because they're getting a dual message. Their parents have PhDs, their parents have MDs, their parents have DDSs, their parents are happy to be in Israel, their parents were proud of Tzva Hagana Yisrael, and suddenly they're getting a chinuch where there's no Yom Atzmaut, where the tzavar is looked down upon, where only an oishvaf, a truant, winds up in the army. Secular education, strictly forbidden. A goal of a Jew is to learn Yom V'Laila, Zachu, Nasem Alachtam Al Yedei Acharim, quoting the Gemara in Bracha, Taflamet Hei, and you're not fair to the children. And I have told the finest of my Talmidim who are firm and dedicated, you're coming to Israel, let the kids have an open education. Encourage them to go to Bnei Akiva. Let them have values. Let them become like the Israeli kids. Let them know that my grandchildren had no youth. After Bar Mitzvah, all they started thinking about was how they're going to do army and what they're going to do in the army. And I say it time and again, the Israeli kids, Baruch Hashem, don't have the teenage youth that we know about all over the world. And al basari achazena. So please, a little bit of this problem of fallout of children, whatever the percentage is, some of it is self-inflicted. Al tehei tzadik harbei. May I quote Kohelet? Try to be reasonable and live in this world and enable your children to live with success and achievement. And finally, let me end off. Certain things happen here that you can't put a spiritual price on it. Certain moments that we dreamt about and perhaps couldn't even dream about because it was beyond our vision. And we're part of it. It happens here. In my own life, I just mentioned in passing, whoever dreamt that a little kid from the Bronx would be able to be Mater and Aguna and have Rav Avadji Yosef give him a big Yashar Koyach. Who would ever dream that a little kid from the Bronx, with his knowledge and learning, can change the army's viewpoint, the army's tactic, the army procedure, the army protocol on such a basic issue, lo aleinu, soldiers, life and death. So there are achievements. Who could dream about this? If anyone would have told me when I sat in Amsterdam Avenue that I'd be part of this, I would have laughed at them. It's nothing to laugh at. But it's more than that. Here, an article just appeared. Grandson of Mengel twin moves to Israel and is a paratrooper in the IDF. Beautiful article. Melbourne family. From people. Wound up in Australia after World War II. Survived all the torture, the experiments. What a family. And now the eldest son, a paratrooper, everyone in the family, the third generation, we're coming back, we're settling where we belong. But more than that, you all know that less than a week ago, within walking distance of here, on Wednesday, was the main ceremony, Yom HaZikaron, 11 o'clock, Prime Minister, the President, thousands and thousands of people. What you may not know And unfortunately, the press did not pick this up because most of the reporters have to come home totally to being Jews yet. And that's our responsibility to set the example. But my children who were there, they were overwhelmed. Why? Because like all public events, affairs, it ended off with Hatikva. Thousands of people sang Hatikva. And then, spontaneously, the audience began Ani Ma'amin. And thousands of people sang Ani Ma'amin. And that finally was followed by Shir HaMalot, B'Shuv Hashem, to the tune of Hatikva. Well, can you put a price on that experience? Can you put a price on that feeling? This is the place to be. This is the greatest gift that God has given us since Matan Torah. What we have gone through, the price we've paid, we can't deny it. We all are part of it. I need not elaborate. But look what we have accomplished. Look at the state. And believe me, 20, 30 years ago, you would not have seen Ani Ma'amin and Shir HaMalot spontaneously. Look what we have accomplished. And there's much more to do. Join us. Help us. Make your life meaningful. Don't just be another social security number, but be part of the Svarim of Ezra Nehemiah, where every name is so precious and mentioned. Put your name there. Okay, can I go a drop further on a slightly different topic, move sideways? A book came out, Ilana Kurashan. If All the Seas Were Ink, a memoir. There was just a book review in my house, the author was there, I hid in my bedroom on my bed with some of my reading material. This book, I raised my hands in defeat. Vic, I've ordered a special Bekisha, blue and white, with a little maple syrup. It's going to cost me a few good $1,000s, but a Rebbe has to have something special. Shtreimel, Mela. My title, you can't use an Israeli city, you know that, to be a Rebbe, the Maplewood Rebbe. No one else has that title. And the gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to get yourselves Bekesh and Shtreimel, so the next time I light Hanukkah candles, you'll stand around me, the Rebbe with the... Charlie, what's going on? Very simple. I always believe with all my heart and soul that the Litvisha world is right. And the more Torah you learn, you'll know how to live like a Jew. This book made me into a Chassidish Rebbe. You have to have a Rebbe to answer to. Forget about learning. This girl is fabulous. I love the book. She's the daughter of a conservative rabbi. She comes on Aliyah. And this girl goes through Shas. She learns, she walks with a book in her hand. In her neighborhood, people know her as the lady who's always walking with a book in her hand. I was capable of doing that when I was younger. Today I'm a little bit wiser. I gotta look down and see that I don't trip. It's a different story. But I love it. And the book is fabulous. She goes through all of Shas and picks out from every Gemara and ties it in with her life. And she's a woman. And she rejoices in a happy marriage. She had a bad marriage, now a happy marriage. And she has children. I mean, that's our greatest challenge. I tell all my granddaughters-in-law that I'm overjoyed that they have PhDs and MDs and this and that. And their greatest achievement are their children. I say, Dad, I'm overjoyed that you remained a woman despite all this feminist thrust. But in the same book, Ilana, she boasts about the fact she goes to an egalitarian minyan, she reads the Torah, reads this, reads that. She leads the davening on Yom Kippur. Her husband goes to a regular minyan, and she davens like that. And I say to myself, you know Shas, you understand Shas. You should understand the Jewish heartbeat, the Torah heartbeat, the difference between men and women. And Michael Miller, who knows her personally, says to me, but she was raised that way. I looked at him, how the heck were you raised? How was I raised? How was Charlie raised? He didn't hear one word about Zionism about Yeshua. Right or right, right or wrong. Quietly, they whispered, like in Lakewood. You know what's going on in Lakewood, right? With the Israeli flag? You don't know? The sandwich shop put up an Israeli flag on Thursday. They lost their hashgacha. So more people than ever now are buying there. So all right, Lakewood has and has. But Israel? My wife grew up in a home. Her parents were Zionist. Her father, we went and they didn't want to talk with us. Can I quote my kefir to you? Israel was a country that was built by children that didn't listen to their parents. Don't tell me the way you were raised. Ilana, I loved your book. I'm becoming a Hasidic Rebbe because of you. Murray, please relate to me, not as Ani or Aaron. Kvold, the maple with the river. Okay, I got it out of my system. Let's go further. Anyone interested? Remember, we spoke about Jenna Weissman Joslett. A student found a lot of material on her, and Ein HaChinami, she's an insider looking out. She's one of us. Here is Rabbi Goldstein, all that happened in Poway. His sister came to visit him from Australia, also a Chabadnikit. And he said to her, I can't make the challenge for Shabbat. He doesn't have, his hands are all bandaged. He's lost fingers. She said, that's why I came, to make the challenge. What good Jews? It's all about. This is, that also goes... Here, this is unbelievable. This is from the one of the websites where Ezra's Torah and the Agudas HaRabbanim was 235 East Broadway. For years, the building stood empty, and all the material there was ransacked. Chaval, it wasn't given to the archives of Yeshiva University. So here's some of what survives, pictures of receipts that Rabbi Henkin wrote. Here's, I think I gave this out already, it's another copy. No, Rabbi Kahana was not a racist. Very interesting article. More or less it says what I said. You don't have to believe with him on everything. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but there's a whole outrageous machlokes whether we can look at the Statue of Liberty, because the woman's arms are not covered, they are bare. I don't know, it may be true. This is fabulous. Bernie Sanders' advisor outraged by video of U.S. Ambassador Friedman asking Rav Pavlovsky, it's the Panovich Rosh Hashiva, for a bracha for Trump's re-election. Here's a fabulous article, Rabbaran Kutler and Vaccines. Rabbaran, when the polio vaccine came out, he was among the first to take the vaccine, Bifnei Amvi Eda. Read the article. This is beautiful. This, Vic, is for you. It's from your relative by marriage, David Newman. That's the Kalibur Rebbe teaching in Cleveland, where he established... He went to Cleveland after World War II. That's the Rebbe teaching. One of these kids may be David Newman. You have to ask him. And on a sad note, this is my Talmud, J. Levine. The bookstore on the Upper West Side is closing. Everybody Shalalim, the only to get a book, a safer, you're going to have to go to Brooklyn. There's going to be nothing left outside of Brooklyn. And finally, this is for Charlie, the greatest professor, role model for Yeshiva University in the 1920s, was Dr. David Macht of Baltimore, MD, pharmacologist, inventions, genius, from Jew, got the earliest doctor of Hebrew literature from Bernard Rebbe, what would become Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. Here he is in the famous picture of the Smicha class, 1929. Here is Dr. Mach standing right there. And for me, he's a living personality. I actually, when I came in yeshiva, they were still talking about him. Until we meet in health and happiness, das v'danya, thank you from the bottom of my heart of honoring me with your presence today.